Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 15, text 10. Utkramantam sthitam vapi bhunjanam vagunan vitam vimurha nanu pashyanti pashyanti jnana chakshushaha. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature, but one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. Everyone is suffering in this material world. To understand this is the first impetus in spiritual life. Now, if everyone is suffering in this world, why do we have to understand it? It should be just obvious. The sun is in the sky. It's not really something you have to understand. I mean, you can understand the hows and the whys and the wherefores according to the latest scientific speculations, but it's just obvious the sun is in the sky. So if everyone is suffering, it should be obvious to everyone. It's an amazing phenomenon that I often notice, that whenever there's a lecture going on and something very minor, which you normally wouldn't take any notice of, like someone coming in the door, everyone's attention goes. It's like there's an inbuilt lack of attention when discussing spiritual subject matters. If I was telling some jokes, maybe the attention wouldn't go. But and these are very important subject matters, aren't they? How we are suffering in this world, but we don't understand it. And if it's true that everyone's suffering in the world, then why would you need to understand it? It's just like everyone has to eat. It's not something you really have to think about it and understand it, unless you're a doctor, maybe a nutritionist or something like that. Why don't we understand? Krishna gives some examples of the sufferings in this material world. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi. They're not the only sufferings, but birth, death, old age and disease are certainly forms of dukkha. Dukkha, dosha, anudarshanam. A person in knowledge sees this by hearing from disciplic succession. Well, we see birth, we see death, we see old age, we see disease. So why is it a matter of knowledge to understand that this is suffering? And clearly, it's all suffering. Well, the answer is given in the purport here. Persons who are everlastingly fooled by lust and desire lose all power to understand their change of body and their stay in a particular body. So you may ask, well, why don't people understand that we're getting born again and again? The answer is because we're overpowered by or lose all power to understand the change of body and stay in a particular body. As Krishna says much earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, that itāri vimohiyatyesha jñāna vijñāna nāshanam, referring to karma, material desire, he says that people become bewildered, fully bewildered like by this, and it is the destroyer of knowledge and understanding. So we don't understand how we go from one body to another and how this is suffering. There may be some people who accept that we go from body to body to body, but they don't understand that this is suffering. They are referred to, again, much earlier in Bhagavad Gita, as Vedavadarata. They accept that there is transfer from one body to another, but they think, well, how can I enjoy life after life? So that is another kind of foolishness. We often quote these four kinds of suffering, and there are many other kinds of suffering also, which are classified in a different way as adhyatmik, adhibhutik, and adhidaivik klesh, that which is produced by our own mind or body, or mind and body. It's not one or the other. Usually both are going on at the same time. All kinds of them. And there's adhidaivik klesh, such as that which natural disturbances, that's called, or that which are arranged by demigods, such as excessive heat. And although the heat in Kuwait at the present time is not as much as would be expected normally at this time of year, it's still uncomfortable and considerably more than many people in other countries experience throughout the whole course of their life. It's uncomfortably hot, and it's going to get a lot hotter before it gets any cooler, unless we're sitting in a comfortable air conditioning here, which is happily contributing to the depletion of the ozone zone and all other kinds of things, which will, in the course of time, create dust storms and more dust storms and more disturbance in the weather. So we may think we're making a solution to the heat, but we're just creating other kinds of problems. Then there is adhibhautik klesh, that suffering caused by other living beings. So janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi are prime examples of the kind of suffering that we cannot avoid, but actually there are many other kinds of suffering. And I thought I'd just go through it a little bit, because often we find, although when we're writing our Bhakti Shastri exam, we'll say that, yes, this world is full of suffering. Okay, good. 10 out of 10, or whatever the marking system is. But we don't really believe it. Or we haven't thought about it very deeply. I mean, everyone's suffering some way or another, right? Is there anyone here who doesn't have any kind of suffering whatsoever? No, no one here. So, but at the same time, your present situation is, if we take all the people in the world, what to speak of all the other living beings in the world, among whom the humans are a very small percentage, if we take all the humans in the world and grade them from 1, 2, 3 down to 7 billion or whatever on the suffering scale, probably most of you would be in the upper bracket, not in the lower bracket. You're not suffering so intensely as others. And most people in India would think that you're in a better position than them. Because, and you also think that's why you came here. You thought you'd have a better life here, and maybe in many ways you do. Anyway, it is a fact that this world is a world of suffering, and as Srila Prabhupada states here, one should learn about this. One should one should learn about this. Where is that? Maybe that's in another purport. It's right there. To understand about this requires a great amount of knowledge understood from Bhagavad Gita and similar literatures heard from a bona fide spiritual master. One who is trained to perceive all these things is fortunate. So all these things means not just the change of the body, utkramantam, but stitam, how we're in this body. Utkramantam stitam vapi bhunjanam vagunanvitam, how in the modes of material nature, how we're changing one body to another and how we're situated in this body. And Krishna has given quite some analysis of this in chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita. Purusha Prakriti Sto Hi, the same word Sto. Bhungte Prakriti Jan Gunan. Karanam Gunasangasya Sadasadhyoni Janmasu. That in one verse gives an overview of the whole thing. How we are living beings, but we are stuck in this material nature. Purusha Prakriti Sto Hi. And we enjoy or suffer our situation according to the modes of material nature, which we attain due to our association with the modes of material nature, and thus we achieve better or worse conditions within the modes of material nature. But it's all suffering. This world is a world of suffering. We may say, well, there's happiness also. But that the happiness in this material world, it is compared to, to give this example, we have to refer to some kind of torture that was previously used in India. It was used as an example in Chaitanya Charitamrita, so presumably it was quite well known at that time. A torture, it's a kind of punishment that's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita as Raja Danda, the governmental punishment. So a person who's a criminal, or maybe he's trying to have the information extracted from him, he is tied to some plank which has a fulcrum underneath it. Is that what you'd call it? There are two sides, and the thing in the middle is called a fulcrum? I don't know. Is that right?
Yes.
I thought the user in engineering might know that. And then so he's tied to that with his head at the extremity, and then it's put at the edge of a pond, and he's put down. So, or there may be different ways of doing it. The point is that his head goes under the water, and then they keep him there until they presume he's just about to pass out, and then they bring him up. And he takes a big breath, and then they put him under again. And this goes on a few times, and hopefully they don't kill him. Anyway, it's just there's no particular person being referred to at the present time. But the happiness of material life is compared to the happiness that one perceives, or the relief that one perceives when one is brought up to breathe in air. But then again you're stuck underneath. Srila Prabhupada told a Gopal Ban story. This is the Bengali equivalent of the Akbar Birbal stories, in which the king said to the court jester, Vidushaka, you have that word in Hindi also, that's the Sanskrit word, Vidushaka. He said to Gopal Ban that, oh, I just got news, my wife has given birth to a boy child, one of my wives. Kings had usually, except Rama, usually had more than, she's given birth to a boy child. I feel so happy. Gopal, you should compose a poem to express the happiness. And Gopal said, yes, it's a great happy occasion, just like the happiness one experiences when one passes stool. And the king was very upset, but he's not allowed to punish. Anyone else said it, he would... The king would have the happiness of cutting off the head of anyone else who said such a thing, but the Gopal Ban, that's his job, to get away with anything. So the king said, how can you say that? You know, it's a very auspicious and happy occasion. He said, I'll explain it to you later. So after some days when this incident was somewhat forgotten, Gopal came and woke up the king very early in the morning and said, you have to come with me immediately. So the king thought, well, I guess if he says so, he must have a reason for doing so. And Gopal took him to the river and went out in a boat and started rowing. And after some time, the king said, when are we going to, can you just go over to the side of the river? I said, no, we have to keep on going. So this went on for some time. And after the king was begging Gopal, get over to the side. Then after some time, only after he was practically ready to throw Gopal, Gopal was saying, no, it's very inauspicious if you go to the side now, and giving various reasons. Then eventually brought him to the side, and then the king emptied his stomach, emptied his intestines, and then Gopal said, so you see? The happiness of passing stool. Could be also for someone who's constipated. That, after 4 days, 5 days, 6 days, praying to Krishna, Krishna, please help me to pass stool. Maybe. So happiness in this world is relief from distress. How much can we suffer? We're sitting here comfortably, but we have suffered previously. We should know that, and we will suffer in future. In fact, we are suffering, or we would be suffering, if we didn't engage now in satsang. Otherwise, we're always suffering, one way or the other. Oh, I'm just trying to getting some pain in my back, just to give some pratyaksha pramana, some direct evidence of what's going on. I had an experience. This must have, it must have been August 1977, or maybe early September 1977. In Delhi, I was resident in the rented house that's in Lajpat Nagar that served as the temple of ISKCON at that time. I had a very painful abscess. I don't know if there are any abscesses which are not very painful, just to let you know. And it was getting about time for, I didn't like to take antibiotics, and it was getting about time for it to get cut. Of course, you could wait for it just to burst, but it was at the cuttable point. It was fully pukka, as is said. So in those days, we didn't spend money unnecessarily, if there was any money to spend. So I walked down to the government hospital and had it cut with a scalpel, I think you'd call that. No anesthesia. I almost passed out. You know when you get giddy, sometimes you feel like you're going to fall over? So it was like that. My head was spinning. I couldn't see. There was little dots of color. It was extremely painful. I still have a scar I can show you if you like. Then I was walking back with still extremely painful. Still extremely painful, knowing that I wasn't going to get any sleep that night. It was the evening, and maybe not for a day afterwards also, from an extreme pain. Then I thought that, well, this is the kind of pain which I'm going to get life after life after life. This is just part of being in the material world. as I often, many people come to me with their problems. They often come to me and say, oh, I have one problem. I tell them, you're very lucky. Most people have many problems. And then they tell me what their problem is, and sometimes it could be turned into a whole Mahabharata. It goes on and on and on and on, and this and this and this and that. But my standard rejoinder is that whatever your problem is, it could be worse. And whatever your problem is, there are plenty of people in the world right now who have much worse problems. So count your blessings, as my Irish relatives used to say. Another thing, accept your lot. Whatever has come, you just have to accept it. So, we're just meant for suffering in this material world. And that kind of suffering can come at any time. You never know when it's going to happen. As a devotee told me, he had heard from a lawyer who dealt with insurance cases in America. That people, you know what it is, you're insured and then you have an accident or whatever and the insurance company doesn't want to give you the money. So they're insurance lawyers. They don't give you the money unless you squeeze it out of them. So this lawyer who had dealt with maybe hundreds, maybe thousands of accident cases, motor car accidents, home accidents, work accidents, he said to this devotee who told me that no one gets up in the morning and thinks, today I'm going to have a serious accident. But there are thousands of people who do. We never think it's going to happen to us. Just like I always put the seatbelt when I go in a car, and the driver often says, oh, it's not needed. Of course, in Kuwait, if you're in India, if you're not in Delhi or Bombay, mostly they say not needed, because they think it's needed only because if you don't have it, the police will come and get some chai money from you. But that's not the reason you put it on, because it is generally thought to reduce the risk of death or serious injury in the case of a road accident. But the driver thinks it's an insult. You know, how could I have an accident? I can't have an accident. I'm a good driver. He doesn't have faith in my driving. That seems to be the idea. And they think, well, I've been driving for 30 years. I never had an accident. And many people have been driving for 30 years who never had an accident, who have an accident. It's not guaranteed that because you never had an accident, that you'll never have one. It's like the gambler. He's throwing the dice or flipping a coin. It comes up heads. It's 50% chance each time, right? Either heads or tails. So he comes up heads 6 times in a row, and he thinks, well, next time must be tails, because it already came up 6 times in a row. If before you started flipping the coin, you would think that the chance of 7 heads in a row, you can calculate. There is some system which I forget, used to know. You can calculate it's not very much, but then after you've done it 6 times, the next time is a unique event and it's still 50%. It's not that that it will turn up tails is the difference between the chance of 6 out of 6 and 7 out of 6. So we have this, many people have a false confidence, or that suffering won't happen to me. It's called durasha in Srimad Bhagavatam. Durasha ye natevidu swartagating hi vishnum, durasha ye bahiratamanina. is described that demoniac people, they do not know that the ultimate goal of life is Vishnu, and they have a hope against hope, bad hope, wrong hope, that they'll be happy in this world. They take everything external to be real. Andhayatan daya rupaniya manasti pishatan tramuru dam nibadha. They are blind and they accept as their leaders other blind people. And in this way they are bound up more and more in this material world. Just like, for example, there are New Age gurus who talk about positive thinking and see, the world is so wonderful, but it's not wonderful. It's wonderful in the sense, what is that? Ahani ahani bhutani gacchanti hayamalayam sheshas tavar icchanti kimas charyamataf param. It's wonderful in as much as people don't see the suffering and they have to die when everyone else is dying, but not me. Even if it's going to happen, it's later. So this idea of positive thinking, isn't the world, see everything wonderful. But Krishna teaches us, don't look like that. Don't think that this world is wonderful. It's a mess. We're in trouble here. So the idea... The idea of thinking positively about this world is stupid. But that's what Krishna is talking about here. Vimudha nanu pashanti. Great fools, they don't even understand this basic thing that we're suffering in this material world. It's so stupid. It's just amazing, the power of Maya. So, just a few of the kinds of sufferings. Well, headache. You may think, everyone's had a headache at some time. But there are some people who have headaches so severely and so frequently, if not practically non-stop, that they commit suicide. And many people who commit suicide. There's over 1 million people a year, according to Wikipedia. That's supposed to be right. Over 1 million people a year. That's a lot, isn't it? And they think that all the figures are not given because some countries they don't like to announce it. So why should someone commit suicide if they get so depressed? They're suffering. They want to bring in. They're suffering so much, and they think that it's better not to exist than to suffer like this. Although they don't know that they're just transferring their situation of suffering from one situation to another. But although people have very strong hope to enjoy in this material world, some are suffering so much and they see no way out of it that they commit suicide. And over 1 million a year. It may be like that because of some severe headache, which there's no treatment works. One aspirin, two aspirins, three aspirin. How many aspirins can you take? Or other kinds of severe suffering, physical suffering. There's also emotional suffering. Someone who is very dear to someone dies. And then they also feel that what is use of living in this world if that person is not there? Heartbreak. This John Lennon, when he was shot dead, one person committed, he wasn't known to him personally, but he had such high opinion of John Lennon, he also killed himself. Emotional, very common suicide, that a lover jilts another lover, and they think, without you I cannot live, and then they literally end their life, or there can be suicide pacts, just like this, what was his name, Dharam Hinduja, if you remember, maybe 20 years ago or more, son of Sri Chand Hinduja, who wanted to marry, I think she was a Christian woman, and the family didn't like it, so they made a suicide pact in which they both decided to die together. But so he burned to death and she didn't. She was smart. She stayed alive and she knows she's going to get the money. So, because she got pregnant by him first. There are many cases like that in the Western world nowadays, because the laws are such that a woman can marry a man, get pregnant by him, then divorce him and take almost literally all his money because she's pregnant with his child. So there are cases of people committing suicide. Can you imagine, you know, someone's worked, they've built a career, they marry someone who they think loves them, and as soon as the girl's pregnant, she divorces him and takes all the money. So she understands she was just cheating him all the way to get his money. And then you're left with nothing. And it's devastating. So people commit suicide. Torture. Any volunteers for torture? There have been devised all kinds of devices to torture people, to inflict severe pain upon them. Recently, that came in the news that the U.S. authorities, I was talking about authorities yesterday, they had devised some system of what they call waterboarding, which something they just recently invented it, so it didn't count as torture. They said it's not torture, but it was torture. The idea is to try to extract information from the prisoners. So that's another kind of torture. And that came up in about 2006, that in a prison in Iraq run by American army, that captured opponents, they were tortured. They're just all kinds of affixing electrodes to their body and putting currents through them and all kinds of horrible. How nasty can humans be that they devise all kinds of tortures? You may not believe in the Yamadutas, but you don't have to wait until death to see if they're real or not. Of course, those who are chanting Hare Krishna don't get taken by the Yamadutas, but such cruelty. And what to speak of in the human form of life, there are literally millions of animals and birds in the world today who are suffering intense pain inflicted by humans, because humans think that these animals are just meant for us to eat. That's a gift of Christianity. The idea that God gave man dominion over the animals, which Srila Prabhupada, he explained that means that you're supposed to look after them, but they took it to mean that we're supposed to eat them. And so they'll kill, and not the killing is the best part probably for the animal. Their life is so miserable. They're treated so badly, so nastily. Chickens, they're put in such conditions that they're packed up in a little cage, and due to the stress of that condition, they want to peck each other, but they pull out their beaks so they can't peck each other to death. So nasty. so much suffering in the world. In Kali Yuga, there are many people, many, many people who are so demoniac. They are paradukkasukhi. They take pleasure in the suffering of others. So, what kinds of death? What kinds of suffering could be there? How would you like to be eaten alive by animals? That happens. Just like animals eat other animals, so there may be a human that is captured by a sharks. The body is just, they just rip it to pieces. There's fish in the Amazon. What are they called? Piranha. So if you, there's no possibility of anyone ever drowning in the Amazon River. Because if you, as soon as you enter it, they'll just strip the body of its flesh, all the little fish. Of course, that's quite quick. The slower death is something. So anyway, I don't know, it could get more and more graphic, and I'm sure there are all kinds of things you could find on the internet of suffering and torture and executions and all kinds of things like this. It's better not to look at that kind of thing. One of my disciples told me that one devotee had given him a video of real deaths, a compilation of that, of murders, and someone was in a national park in America and a bear came behind him and I cut off his head or something like that, killed him. And he told me that, I don't know why he gave this to me to see, because it's just like, it's traumatic. You can't get it out of your mind for months. So we don't want to go too deeply into all of this. Once in England, this was in the 1970s, it was decided to have a special edition of, to start producing Back to Godhead in British English. Because often people in Britain used to complain to us that our literature is in American English. And they didn't like that. I don't know if they still have that. But there's the feeling that, why do you have to read this in American English? We want British English. Because some of the words are spelled differently. So devotees made a separate Back to Godhead magazine, and they showed some of the religious history of England in there. In fact, my religious education classes, the main thing I remember from the religious education class I had at school was telling how the Catholics in Britain were tortured and killed by the Protestants. Probably if I'd gone to a Protestant school instead of a Catholic school, my religious education class would have largely consisted of how the Protestants were tortured and killed by the Catholics. But this edition of Back to Godhead, they had pictures of taken from several hundred years old, reproductions of several hundred years old pictures of people being tortured, and they say, the idea is to say, well, look, this is your Christian religion, we've got something better. This was shown to Srila Prabhupada, and he said, we should not show this. We should show, we can discuss the misery of material life, but we shouldn't have such graphic pictures. That's nasty things. He said, we should have nice, or pictures that show the beauty of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. Although in Bhagavad Gita as it is, in the first edition, there were several pictures of what happens to you if you engage in sinful activities. But it wasn't so graphically disturbing. It shows that someone who eats meat becomes a tiger, someone who goes naked becomes a tree, and so on. Anyway, I'm just trying to get across the point here without getting too much involved in giving so many details. But the fact is that this world is full of suffering. When we think of that, well, we may have a toothache, it's certainly suffering, a mild headache, cold is miserable. These are all things that we regularly have to go through. But apart from that, even a cold is miserable, isn't it? Even a common cold, which we know it's nothing serious, you'll get over it, but it is definitely miserable. But then there is really intense misery. And living in this material world means that we may go through prolonged intense misery. And intense suffering. And in fact, if you think about the condition of a pig, even though the pig may think himself very happy, but it's a very degraded position for the spirit soul who is by nature Satchidanandamay. So, and what to speak of that condition, whereas one is just suffering intensely. My godbrother Shyamasundara Prabhu has talked about road accidents. He was in a road accident, him and his wife. And he often relates how the pain, he was suffering intense pain for months, day and night. Intense pain, with he had so many broken bones. And he said, from the point of view of suffering, death would have been better. he said he couldn't have imagined it prior to that. Prior to the accident, he just couldn't have imagined how anyone could suffer so much, even for a short time, what to speak of month after month after month. That's life in the material world. We should be aware of this. Usually we don't become aware of it until we're exposed to it. Those who are exposed to it, at least if they've being exposed to the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, they can put it in perspective and understand, oh, this is Krishna's message to me. Krishna's kindly given me this suffering so I can become serious about spiritual life. That's what I thought walking back from the government hospital. I thought, I better get serious about Krishna consciousness, otherwise I'm going to have this kind of thing life after life after life. And you see that in the lower species also, the insect becomes caught in the spider's web, struggling to get free, and the spider is just watching. And the insect knows, I have no hope. One experience I had, you know these birds, the kokil, they sing very sweetly in the morning. So I heard one and I looked out and I saw the kokil was sitting on the telegraph line, singing very sweetly, but then in its claw between its foot and the telephone line it had some quite big insect which was flapping and this and that, and the kokil was thinking, I'm singing now, I'll eat it later. So singing very sweetly, and the insect was some butterfly or something, was flapping and trying to get away, but the kokil couldn't. I don't know if it had any awareness of the suffering of the insect. But it's just no hope, must die, and suffering in that way. So we have to suffer in birth after birth after birth. That is not the highest inspiration for taking to Krishna consciousness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Mama janmani janmani shvare bhavatad bhakti rahaitu kitvai. If we understood how much suffering there is in material life, we might be hesitant to pray like that. If we actually understood. Of course, Krishna generally doesn't put his devotees into situations of such suffering, but there may be. How much the Pandavas had to suffer. Even Bhishma, he was surprised. Of course, for a devotee, jato deko vaishnave bebohara duk. Nischayjane hataha parananda shuk. A devotee never actually suffers. It may seem like that, but because he's always thinking of Krishna, he's in full happiness. But what difficulties they had to undergo. There are many examples. In Bhagavatam also there's the example of the Avanti Brahmana, who was a rich merchant, but he was very miserly and not a nice person. And he mistreated people, and even his own family members didn't like him. But they tolerated him because he was maintaining them. But at some point, by the arrangement of Providence, Krishna, he lost all his money. And then his family members, having no more use for him and not liking him, they turned him out of the house. And from being respected, if not liked, he suddenly became a vagrant, beggar, considered a useless person, disrespected. And he sometimes had to go without food. Sometimes he would get some food, and then he would sit down to eat it, and someone would come and urinate on that food. That's described because someone who's old and has nothing, and he has nothing going for him. You can mistreat and do as you like to such people if you have such a mentality to do so. So in that situation, he took shelter of Krishna. Despite his bad personality, sometime in some life he had some contact with bhakti. So he took shelter of Krishna. And he saw all this suffering as Krishna's mercy on him. He was being insulted and mistreated in so many ways. He took it as Krishna's mercy. Vasudev Datta, follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, give me all the sufferings of the jivas and let them all be liberated. Who would dare to pray like that? If they actually knew what the suffering was all about, if they actually thought they were going to get such suffering. It's inconceivable. How can one jiva have the capacity to experience so much suffering? That means he's prepared to suffer practically indefinitely so that others can be delivered. So that is compassion. As Srila Prabhupada writes here, we may not pray like Vasudevdatta. We might pray, but I don't know if Krishna would hear our prayer because it would be imitational. We don't know what we're doing. If we were to pray like that, it'd be like a child, just imitating. But Srila Prabhupada writes here that they cannot comprehend it. Persons who are everlastingly fooled by lust and desire lose all power to understand their change of body and their stay in a particular body. They cannot comprehend it. They don't even realize this, their suffering. It doesn't mean that their suffering is any less, but because of lust or the desire that to enjoy, they think, well, I'll they're still hoping there'll be some enjoyment. Or the person who commits suicide to get free from pain, they think, I'll get some relief. They're not thinking of serving Krishna. So those who have developed spiritual knowledge, however, can see that the spirit is different from the body and is changing its body and enjoying in different ways. A person in such knowledge can understand how the conditioned living entity is suffering in this material consciousness. If we see that, if we think that someone is enjoying, or if we think that, someone's in such a high position that they must be very happy, then we're not in, our spiritual consciousness is not developed. Srila Prabhupada warned, so I've heard, it's not documented, that if a sannyasi enters the house of a rich man and thinks, I could also have enjoyed like this, then he's fallen, even to think like that. So a person in such knowledge can understand how the conditioned living entity is suffering in this material existence. Therefore, those who are highly developed in Krishna consciousness try their best to give this knowledge to the people in general, for their conditional life is very much troublesome. Troublesome is really an understatement. They should come out of it and be Krishna conscious and liberate themselves to transfer to the spiritual world. So devotees should understand how material existence is full of suffering as an incentive to become Krishna conscious. And also understanding that we can help others to come out of this by giving them knowledge of Krishna consciousness, and we should do so. So we should open our eyes and see. Open our eyes means Pashyanti Jnana Chakshusha. We see through the eyes of knowledge. Everyone sees the same things, but we perceive it differently due to our understanding. So we perceive through the eye of knowledge which Krishna is giving here in Bhagavad Gita, which is received through the disciplic succession. Vimura nanu pashyanti. Those who are very foolish, they don't approach the disciplic succession to gain this knowledge. Or anu. Anu means following, so we see by receiving that knowledge which is received, following one person after another. Parampara passes down this knowledge. So anu can also mean continuous or continual. So it may be that materialistic people do see the suffering, but for a short time. And they don't see it all the time. They may have what is called smashan vairagya. They go to the burning ghat, one of their relatives dies, and they think, he's gone. I'll also be taken one day in such a procession. Then what is this world? Everything here is empty. I should take to spiritual life. He has all these elevated thoughts, then he comes up, and after the ceremony, they meet all the relatives they didn't see for some time. They say, how are you doing? And how's your son doing, studying in America? And then they forget all of it. And their vairagya lasts as long as they're at the burning ghat. And when they come away, it's just life goes on as normal. That's why they have professional mourners in some country, people who are paid to cry at a funeral. I used to be a Catholic altar boy, so I used to do these funerals, and you go to funerals and everyone's all sad. It's a social convention that everyone should be sad at a funeral. But then when it's over, then they all meet each other and have some tea and this and that, and then within a short time they're all joking and laughing. And so they see the suffering, but they forget it. Vimurha. They see and they forget. So one should see Janma Mritya Jaravyadi Dukkha Dosha Anudarshana. Anudarshana means we should see through the disciplic succession that the miseries are there of birth, death, old age and disease. And we should always see it. That is a symptom of knowledge. Not that we suddenly start thinking, well, actually this material world is very nice. I was miserable in the material world and I took to Krishna consciousness, and now by the grace of Krishna I've become rich, so I don't really need to be in this movement anymore. So thank you very much, Krishna. And Hare Krishna to all of you. Or maybe I'll stay in this movement and get richer also. You never know. People get Krishna's blessings in different ways. If we want wealth from Krishna, he might give it to us, might become very wealthy, but we might not get pure love of Krishna. Or if we approach Krishna for wealth, you never know, he might take away whatever you've got now and leave you with nothing. Which we never, actually, how much do we have anyway? We have nothing. We're just thinking, I have this. So we should see through the eye of Shastra everything. Who is the richest person in the world? Krishna. He's the only one. No one has anything. The richest person means the biggest thief. He's because he thinks, I have got this much, more than others, but it all belongs to Krishna. So if someone thinks it belongs to me, then he's a thief. This is seeing through the eye of Shastra. Krishna is giving us that knowledge. Hare Krishna, any question about this, please? Yeah.
We have just discussed about one sannyasi and rich people, right? Sannyasi has fallen down because of some wish.
Yeah, if a sannyasi thinks that, oh, I could have enjoyed such wealth and comfort and prestige, that is a fall down for a sannyasi. If he thinks that, he may think I could have enjoyed it, but if he thinks regretfully that, oh.
So that is comes out from impression or sanskara?
He may not say it. He's not likely to say it. But if he thinks, even thinking it is a kind of fall down.
So how, we are also a social sannyasi, right?
You're a social sannyasi? What do you mean by that?
Devotees are also social sannyasi or not?
I don't really understand what you mean by social sannyasi.
Yes, we are also living socially, fulfilling our social duties. At the same time, we also evolve in the Krishna consciousness and Krishna
yoga. Oh, I see. In that sense, someone can be a sannyasi without being officially a sannyasi. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. Anashrita karma palang karyang karma karoti yaha. Sasanyasi cha yogi cha naniragnena chakriyaha. Krishna says one who performs his duty without being attached, he is a real sannyasi and a yogi, not one who formally accepts sannyas. Of course, it's much easier to say or think that I'm just living in the world but I'm not attached to it than to actually be detached. One may think I'm a grihastha, but internally I'm a sannyasi, but mostly everyone does have many attachments. But in this case, I recounted Srila Prabhupada saying this. This would refer to someone who has officially accepted sannyas.
So for us, how we can save ourselves to fall?
But that also for a grihastha, if he goes in someone, he has some house, but if he goes in a rich man's house and he feels envious of him, he's not in a very high level of Krishna consciousness. Someone who is in a householder who is not in a very good financial position but is blessed by being in Krishna consciousness is in a much better situation than a grihastha who has lots of money but is not Krishna conscious. So a devotee should never think that someone's better off than me, or that Krishna's kinder to them because they got so many facilities, more than myself. Even we shouldn't think that Krishna's being kinder to someone if they're on the same economic level, but they don't. Why is it that my unmarried daughter got pregnant and his didn't? Krishna's not kind to me. So we shouldn't think that Krishna's unkind to us. We should accept, as Srila Prabhupada writes here, that we should accept that whatever Krishna gives, we should accept it as his mercy.
And one more question. How we can save ourselves from the fall down from that all kinds of temptation?
How can we save ourselves from the fall down from all kinds of temptation? I'll narrate an anecdote in this regard. Again, it's undocumented. Once Srila Prabhupada was taking darshan of the deities of Radha Landanishwar, and he was standing and obviously absorbed for quite some minutes, and a devotee asked, he had the chutzpah or the besharami to ask Srila Prabhupada that what were his thoughts when he was taking darshan. And Srila Prabhupada said that I was praying to Radha and Krishna that I never fall down. Sometime later, that same devotee was present when Srila Prabhupada said to a group of his disciples, that any of you could fall down, but I cannot fall down. And then that devotee said to Srila Prabhupada that, well, Prabhupada, you said that you were praying to Radha and Krishna that you won't fall down, so how is it that you can't fall down? Prabhupada said, because I'm always praying to not fall down, therefore I won't fall down. But if we're thinking that, well, maybe I could just enjoy a little bit, not very much, just a little bit, then we come out of the shelter of Krishna's protection. Then we're in trouble. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada, who gave us this knowledge. We're eternally grateful to him.